Blog Talk Radio.
Everybody, and welcome to the 187th edition of the Feuerstein's Fire American Soccer Show. I'm your host, Daniel Feuerstein. I'll give you an American perspective of our clubs, league players, national team, and other fabulous moments. You can get your daily reading from me and other writers over at soccernewsday.com. Chat room is open. Come on in. And if you have a question for me, I'll try to answer to the best of my ability. If you have a question for my guests, I'll let them answer it to the best of their ability as we are on the verge of starting the second division season here in both the United States and in Canada, the North American Soccer League spring season. It will be underway. Joining me right now are my guests currently. We have a couple more on their way. We have the play-by-play voice of the Atlanta Silverbacks and Ryan Martin. We also have on, make sure that we got everyone here coming on here. We also have on Steve Sander, who is the analyst for the FC Edmonton side. We have on John Marthaler, covers the Minnesota United FC. We have James Hope from San Antonio on the Scorpions, member of the Crocketeers. And we also have on Peter Brown from the Miami Ultra Show, which you can listen to later on tonight at 9 o'clock. As well as on blogtalkradio.com. Head on over there. We also have on some brand new people as well. We have on Mr. Brad Fauge from covers the Ottawa Fury over at Canadian Soccer News Group. And I believe we have someone new here. Let's also not forget Neil Morris of The Independent covering the Carolina Railhawks. And I want to ask a question. Do we have Mr. Derek Ritchie on right now?
We certainly do. Happy to join the party.
All right. And, of course, you know him, Derek Ritchie, from his Straight Red Card podcast, as well as a member of the Brickyard Battalion in the brand-new place over in Indianapolis. And before we get this party rolling, and it's going to be a lot of fun here as we're waiting for a couple more people, and let's not also forget about my good buddy in New York City, Cesar Diaz, covering the New York Cosmos over there for Latino Sports. And as well as, of course, Garrett Tozer in Tampa Bay. It's a full card, gentlemen. It's a full card of NASL talk. And before we get to the meat and potatoes, I want to welcome the two new expansion sides, obviously the Ottawa Fury and the Indy 11 side. Let's go to Canada first. And, Brad, how exciting was it when you heard that Ottawa Fury, who has been in the lower levels, not just in U.S. club soccer, but Canadian soccer, that finally you're going to be joining with Edmonton as the two Canadian sides in this second division league?
Yeah, man, it was really exciting for me. I actually coached for the Ottawa Fury for a little while on the women's side in the USL Super Y League, and when I found out the NASL team was coming, obviously I was over the moon, as they say.
Oh, definitely. I don't blame it at all, and it's fantastic. And, of course, Lansdowne Stadium, I believe it's called, that hosted the Under-20 World Cup when Canada was the host nation. That must be exciting. I know you still have that underground arena for the Ottawa 67s in the Junior Hockey League over there, I think the Ontario League. How exciting is the entire city of Ottawa right now that you're going to have second division soccer in the town?
Yeah, for sure. Everyone is pretty excited about it. We'll be starting, of course, at our Carleton University field here, which will hold approximately, I think, 3,500 fans is what they're hoping for, mm-hmm. expandable to about 5,000. So we're hoping to pack that and get off to a good start for the first 9 games of the season. But moving to Lansdowne and opening against the New York Cosmos in the fall season is pretty exciting for everyone who's following soccer in Ottawa, for sure.
Absolutely. Let's bring in Derek Ritchie right now, the other expansion side that's coming in. Derek, and I know you've been on the show before, but I have to say it's been nothing short of miraculous, not so much miraculous, but just, I guess, a fairy tale story to see what, not just what Peter Wilt has done to bring this club into the second division, in American soccer, but still, though, the way that you and the Brickyard Battalion supporters have done such a wonderful job, not just embracing it, because it sounds like Indiana, the state of Indiana, has always loved soccer. It's just they never had, a higher-level professional side come in. It's just been a wonderful story to read, especially going through Twitter and everything.
Yeah, I mean it's been pretty amazing the whole travel, the whole evolution of this has been pretty amazing. And actually, there's some guys on the phone here tonight who were very helpful at the very beginning, kind of getting us a strong foundation and a good starting point. I think we just had a friendly against IU, Indiana University, not long ago, a couple days ago, and. We had for a game with really crummy weather, and it was raining, and it was like 40 degrees. We had almost 5,000 people come out for that, which I think is just I think bodes well for the fact that we expect a full 10,000 butts in the seats for I'm hoping the whole season in every game.
Absolutely, and they'll be playing their games over at the IU. PUI Track and Field Soccer Stadium, and hopefully there will be a future that there will be another a real good soccer stadium being built in the town inside Indianapolis. Just got to say, it's just a fantastic thing to see. And, good luck this season, and good luck in the fall when we get there.
I appreciate it.
Not a problem at all. And, of course, everyone is gunning for this particular team that makes their home games over in Hofstra University. And joining me now, of course, I have to say he does write for This Is Cosmos Country. That's my bad. My good friend Cesar Diaz, who covers the New York Cosmos for This Is Cosmos Country, and as well as Latino Sports. And Cesar, it sounds interesting to hear that you think the Cosmos, they're going to be victorious again this season in the spring.
Well, I never said that. I just tweeted it, joking around in my Bobby Brain Heenan mode, I don't know. I don't think it's going to be easy in the springtime. I mean, I think a lot of teams gotten better, And from looking at it, statistics, looking at it over the years, it's usually Carolina, Tampa Bay, as well, and the Scorpions that usually start out running and gunning. So I'm not sure if a 9-game season benefits the Cosmos. But then I'm also not sure, too, if the 18 or 19 game season following that also benefits them. I mean, it's such a lopsided schedule, and throwing the fact that there's also the U.S. Open Cup, the same schedule that everybody's facing, but, I'm just, I think like any team, players are a year older, you have new players, we changed our goalkeeper, so it's going to be, I'm excited to see what goes on,
Yeah, so am I, but let me get this question in first here, and this is for everyone, and I guess we'll start it off with Ryan, with Mr. Ryan Martin, the play-by-play voice of the Atlanta Silverbacks. How do you feel about this right now? It's a 9-game season. It's very uneven at the moment, and it's a split season anyway, but 9 games, but you take a break for the World Cup. What's your opinion on that, Ryan? How are you feeling with a 9-game season so short?
Well, I hate to sound too critical of the league itself, especially considering my connections to one of its member clubs, but you get the feeling that this year maybe it was a case of shoehorning the split season in. Could they have gone with the full single table covering all of 2014? Sure, they could. And I understand that they didn't split the spring and the fall evenly because of concerns about when they would have to start the spring season in order to do that, the weather you would have in some of the northern locations. Maybe with that in mind, if they were so indebted to the split season, maybe there wasn't a better way to do it. But, as Cesar said, 9 games, who knows? You look at it, it really, I think this is the 9-game spring season is going to be the time for any of the teams who would otherwise finish mid-table to really make a mark, put a good run together, maybe get into the postseason that way. You look at it, if you start the spring season off well, if you go ahead and get a couple of games, a couple of wins in the book, you're sitting on 6 points after 2 weeks, you're really in the driver's seat. So let's see how it pans out. It definitely has the potential to make the postseason very different this year, and maybe we won't end up with really the straight top four overall playing for the championship come November.
And, Stephen, how do you feeling for this spring season as well? Stephen Sander over in Edmonton, you can follow his blog, The11CA, the color man for FC Edmonton matches for Rogers Sportsnet 360. Stephen, you know, for a team like Edmonton, obviously, that they've had some okay times, some not-so-good times, but do you feel that maybe if Edmonton could sneak in and get a playoff spot for the end of the spring season to attempt a Soccer Bowl championship game, you think they could take advantage of something like this?
I would say maybe yes, but there's a couple of real obstacles in the FC Edmonton schedule. One is they're one of the half of the teams that play the four at home, five on the road, and you know it's a big home advantage that they lose, that they have to play the extra road game, where coming up to the Northwest for everyone is a big haul to come up, and it's going to be they'll still be on the football lines for the spring season. The new turf goes in ahead of the fall season, so you'll still have beyond that terrible old stuff, which I think actually increases their home advantage a little bit to when they actually get the proper new field turf in ahead of the fall campaign. Obviously, the weather isn't good enough right now at Edmonton to install the turf. They have to wait till the summer to put it in. I mean, there's still snow on the ground right now, so you can't even think about putting the turf in for the spring season. So that's a problem. The fact that basically Edmonton knows that with only four home games, there's no margin of error, and Colin Miller, the coach, has told me over and over that we have to run the table at home. If we even have a draw at home, it's going to be difficult to win the season, simply because we know in this league teams don't travel well. Teams don't get points on the road. They don't stay for very long. They kind of blow in, blow out. They connect on flights. They don't fly direct. The players, when they show up, are somewhat exhausted. The teams bring shortened rosters on the road. You know, I think only the Cosmos is the only team that really brings the full road complement with them of any of the teams that I've seen come in. So it's a big challenge to ask the team to have in five road games to try to get something out of it against only the four home games. And as well for FC Edmonton, the real tough part of their thing is they start off against the two highest spending teams in the league. They start off at Tampa Bay without their starting keeper who's hurt, Lance Parker, and then they come home for their home opener against the Cosmos. So, you know, they could be looking at 1 or 0 out of 6 to start off. You know, our previous speaker was just talking about getting 6 out of 6. But I think, you know, Edmonton would be really, really happy, I think, if they got 3, and then you go on. But, you know, you wonder when you get to the easier part of the schedule if you're already sort of out of it by then, and you're just thinking about that top four. I know that they're a lot happier that they put the top four system in now rather than the two, the spring and the fall, getting in, that they're going to have two more wild card spots available in the championship. Don't say the word playoffs. But, you know, I still think there's some consternation in the fact that some teams are getting 4 games at home and some teams are getting 5 games at home. And, you know, I think for some teams that have a huge home advantage, it's a problem that they kind of lose that. And Edmonton also loses the chance to play some games in some cold weather at home in that situation. That's an advantage, just as much of an advantage as it is, and you've heard me say this before, as it is to see Carolina play in 100-degree temperature, or San Antonio play in 100-degree temperature. If they can do that in August, then why can't Edmonton play in freezing temperatures in April?
Well, we'll see what happens, but obviously, you know, I feel it's a big disadvantage to see. I mean, I know that I put on Twitter that, you know, it would be a very big disadvantage, especially when you have the big rivalry games. Obviously, you know, we'd love to see a Canadian second game between Edmonton and Ottawa, the same thing in Florida with Fort Lauderdale and Tampa Bay. And going to both Peter Brown from the Ultras Alive show that'll be on at 9 o'clock here on Blog Talk Radio later on, as well as Garrett Kozer from Tampa Bay. You guys, I mean, it's only one game. I forget where it's going to be, the one game, but, you know, if there was going to be a 10-game season, at least you would have the big Florida derby between Tampa Bay Rowdies and Fort Lauderdale Strikers. It's only one, and I think that's a big disadvantage.
Yeah, I'd say it's a disadvantage, especially for the Strikers, since we're playing at Rowdies, and we never play well at Rowdies.
Go ahead, Garrett.
Oh, yeah, yeah. I was going to say, not only with the Values Strikers match being at home, but the week before that, we host the Cosmos as well. So, yeah, these, I mean, not the biggest fan of this split schedule, but it definitely has fallen in our favor. So it would be quite disappointing with those two rivalry games at home back-to-back to not feel pretty good about our chances this spring season.
Now, I mean, I would love to see, obviously, I mean, you probably have Atlanta versus Carolina playing each other twice, like we've already said before about the Florida teams playing each other twice, the two Canadian teams playing each other twice. You could probably see Indianapolis and Minnesota play each other twice. I know the odd teams out would be the Cosmos and the Scorpions, except if it's the Hans Dennison sweepstakes, which unfortunately he's now with the Cosmos there, James, and that must really hurt to see your top scorer heading up north to be with the Cosmos this upcoming season.
Yeah, that was a tough loss for us, not just on the field where Hans was nearly led the league in scoring, but just the fact that he was such a personal player and one that was a fan favorite. He certainly was a loss. We wish him the best of luck, and, you know, when he comes back, we're still going to hope he does well, but not too well, you know. So.
Ah, yes, the old, we wish him luck, but not when he plays us. I get that, don't worry. But, you know, Neil, another interesting thing that's happened, the NASL has moved their offices out of Brickell Key in South Florida, just south of the American Airlines Arena, and they're up in my neck of the woods. They're on 34th Street near Herald Square in New York City. Is that a smart move for the league to move their offices? I mean, I understand the NFL is here, the NHL, Major League Baseball, MLS, most of the top sports leagues' offices are in New York City. But do you think that the league just made a right move to move up here, or do you think they should have just stayed in South Florida?
Well, it was probably an inevitable move for the league to go to New York proper, not just because it's sort of the hub of other sports leagues, but you know, it's probably good to get some help with office supplies from the Cosmos or something like that.
You
know, paper clips are expensive, and you know, and I guess it at some point it also, it's going to be interesting to see which of the staff of the league also, if they consolidate staff. I mean, I'm being serious on that. You've had a situation where the commissioner's been in one part of Florida and the operations manager is in California and the PR director's been in Boston. So, you know, more than just moving the name office, you know, I'm hoping there's going to be a consolidation of staff as well. But that, I guess all of that remains to be sorted out. Jumping back to, if I could for just a second, back to the spring schedule, I'm going to dovetail off something mm-hmm. Steve said. I mean, and I wrote about this back in December, that the huge inequity on this 9-game split season. And, you know, Peter Brown and I joke all the time that we're the last people that support this split season. But the huge inequity here is the loss of one home game for four of the teams, Carolina, Atlanta, Fort Lauderdale. I'm sorry, five of the teams, Carolina, Atlanta, Fort Lauderdale, Edmonton, and Minnesota. You know, Carolina really felt the pinch because not only do they have one less home game, but they're also the only U.S.-based NASL team that has to travel to both Ottawa and Edmonton during the spring. And they open and close their 9-game spring season on the road. So that's sort of a triple whammy that the Railhawks are pretty cognizant of, and it's a huge triple mountain for them to try to overcome.
Yeah, that really sounds very difficult. But here's the real reason why they left South Florida, and maybe Peter Brown can contest to this, as I have been to the NASL offices one or two years ago. The real reason why they left is, have you seen the size of those freaking iguanas at Brickell Key? I mean, my God, you go over that freaking bridge, and they're like, you're walking it, and they're like the size of, I don't know, three large model trains. I'm telling you, it's like three large model locomotives. Those things are huge.
Hey, that's what happens when you. That's what happens when you live in the tropics, yeah, down here in fantasy land, you know, in beautiful weather. We don't have to worry about the snow, but you know, you got to dodge some iguanas every once in a while.
But surely the iguanas are just laying out in the sun like everybody else, right? So it's,
of course.
You know, not that big of a deal.
Topless just like everybody else.
Just rub some lotion on them, they'll be fine.
But I'm not really joking. Those things, I don't know what type of those of lizards they are, but those things were freaking huge. I mean, I thought I was going to get my hand bit off or something, but boy, I'll tell you. But as we continue on, get a little more serious here, over in Minnesota, John, Minnesota United had a great preseason trip to England, I understand. Who are the opponents? And Manny Lagos, of course, always likes to take these things seriously. Doesn't matter where the preseason is, doesn't he?
Yeah, they got serious with preseason this year, in part as a response to their preseason last year, where they attempted to take sort of their traditional trip to Kansas City, and much of it got snowed out. So this year they went to Los Angeles for a while and played against the Galaxy in the Galaxy Reserves, and they went to England and took sort of a 10-12-day jaunt over there to stay at the St. George's Park, which is the training facility for the England national team, and is sort of a soccer center over there. And they played a game against Matlock Town, which I think is in the 7th division over there, and they also played a pro player academy, which is sort of a team made up of some young players. They had a couple guys on loan from Manchester City, a couple of young players on loan from Manchester City. And then they took on Derby County, which was actually a pretty decent Derby County team that had, I think, 6 of their first team in there on a Monday afternoon at a random place. But they only lost that one 2-1, which is a pretty good sign for Minnesota, given that Derby County is one of the better championship teams in England.
All right, well, let's talk about some of these rosters here. Let's go to the new kids on the block, obviously, Ottawa and Indianapolis. The Indy 11 will go with Brad first with Ottawa. Obviously, Brad, you like a couple of homegrown Canadians on your Ottawa team as well. And talk to us about who right now is big time on Ottawa right now that will tickle your fancy and everyone else that will support the Fury.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know if there's any young Canadians who will be the one to step up, but up top we've got the young Brazilian Oliver Minutel, who I think is going to surprise a lot of people. Staying with the forwards, Tom Heineman used to be with the Vancouver Whitecaps, was impressive. Now, in Ottawa, we didn't have the fortune of seeing all of our preseason games. Our team traveled to Florida for the last 3. We had some players who were signed early, arrive late, and didn't get into any games in Ottawa, so we didn't get to see a few of the young players. But I think the player that teams are going to be the most unhappy to see is probably the Palestinian international Omar Joran, who is, quite frankly, a nasty center back.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, it sounds like it's going to be a lot interesting. Before we go to Derek, I know Caesar wants to talk about the moving of the office to New York City. Go ahead, Caesar. What do you want to say about it?
Well, you know, I just hope that the move is definitely – I hope that their office is bigger than my 2-bedroom apartment, you know what I mean? It would be – because, you know, I mean, look, if you live in New York, you know how expensive rent is, you know what I mean? To be honest, the only thing I know that's for sure about their move is that their rent has gone up. And my concern about this, while it sounds ideal – that it's great that they're moving their operations to New York. But you mentioned Major League Baseball, the NFL, the NBA. Those leagues make billions of dollars in revenue a year. The MLS, I don't know, you know, looking at it realistically, I'm not sure how is it that they're making their money. You know, and then the thing about it, they're trying to do, my concern with them moving here, I hope that they're not trying to do everything that MLS is, you know. Hey, they have an office in New York. Let's get one. They charge for online streaming games. Let's do the same. They want to set teams around here. Let's do it. You know, if we're all you baseball fans, imagine the Oakland A's trying to match the New York Yankees dollar for dollar. It's not going to happen. So the only thing I'm a bit concerned about with the move is just more that because you know you have okay fine there's the expansion teams and all that, but once those franchise fees, I'm sure they'll probably go towards salary, towards rent, towards paperclips, utilities. What then? how has the league made money over the years itself? That's where I'm concerned a bit about the move, you know. How are they being financed for? What are they getting, you know what I mean?
No, I hear you saying, and go ahead.
U.S. Soccer is, you know, is located in Chicago, and, you know, now it's not a league itself, but it oversees several different leagues, and I think they do fine being in Chicago. I think as long as you're in a major market where you can get the resources that you need with the people that you need to hire and such, you could be anywhere, if it's New York or Chicago, Miami, or wherever. But it just seems we're just trying to keep up with the Joneses and say, well, if MLS is in New York, then we've got to be there to show that we're just as good or if not better. So, I mean, where they are is fine. It's, you know, but it just seems like it wasn't a necessary move that had to happen.
I hear you're worried about rent, but I'm guessing they don't have to pay to rent out the Cosmos' back pocket anyway, so they're probably doing okay.
Oh, man, come on. You know what? I almost hope we don't win the spring season, so that way it'll debunk all the conspiracy theories, you know?
But come on, you know conspiracy
theories. Man. You guys are killing me.
It's all for great radio, Caesar. You know it, and I know it.
Are the Cosmos playing the spring season this year, or are they getting a free pass to the fall again?
No, we're
they're only going to play the spring season, though. They're going to win the spring season.
Well, you know what, though? I just signed a contract with the team for the spring season, so I'll be playing every game, you know, so while the first team prepares for the fall. You guys are killing me, man. Are you guys still that angry? I guess if the shoes were reversed, I'll be upset, too.
And that's why I get paid $10 an hour to hear everyone's complaints. No, I'm just joking. But as we head on back with the rosters here, head with the Indy 11, Derek, obviously, you have Cleverson, who's joined the club this year, coming from his season with the Philadelphia Union MLS, of course, a player that's played with Manchester United and Paranaense down in, I believe, in Brazil. How is it to have a player of his caliber and the career he's had, and I'm assuming I don't know who's the captain yet, you would know this, but has he been named captain of the club, or is it someone else, and what will his veteran presence do for this rookie season for Indy 11 soccer?
Well, we've already seen the results so far, believe it or not, in a couple friendlies that he's played in. The class is pretty evident from everything from field presence right on down to the incredible 30-yard free kick he took just a few days ago, which dipped quickly over the wall and almost went in, and of course led to a rebound that we scored on. But, you know, we're going to have to rely on a lot of other people as well for not only leadership, but to get the results. And luckily we were able, of course, early on to sign Christian Nisch, who has Bundesliga experience, and that's a big plus for us. We were able to sign Norales, who is a Honduran international, and for all rights, guys like Norales and Cleverson probably could be playing in MLS right now. And you know, Brad Ring, you know, there's a guy with some MLS experience. So we're going to need all of those guys to do well, and, of course, probably – too much to James' consternation, we also were able to pick up Ramirez from San Antonio. And I think those guys are really going to form the bulk, especially in the midfield, and hopefully provide us a real solid foundation for the whole season. But, you know, just like any brand-new team that just started playing together, and I know a lot of the other teams have had, you know, different guys come in, during the off season, but for us, you know, none of these guys have played together before, ever, and so it's been an interesting evolution to see things get better, things progress, and the team starting to click a little as we head into the season.
Absolutely. I know I can't wait to see you guys get out there in the field. But I will say this, it's going to be pretty interesting to see what's going to happen, especially when the Open Cup games come underway. And once U.S. Soccer announces those Open Cup dates, of course, we'll let everyone know what's going on. Let's head over to Atlanta. And, Ryan, I think it's not so much about the roster that has changed, but obviously the coaching situation has changed, which was very, very, very weird. I know it was a tough loss at home in the NASL Soccer Bowl final last year, but – to have Eric Wynalda now in a role as not just sporting director, but at the same time head coach, and he's going to manage while he's going to be in California for Fox Sports One. What do you expect coming from Eric Wynalda coaching, I guess, by Skype?
Yeah, he's got a lot on his plate these days, doesn't he? But, you know, I guess the good thing with that is he's got a few paychecks coming in as well from a few different sources. You know, the key, obviously, is the coaching staff that he's assembled because, you know, first part of the week, they're the ones who are going to be conducting training. They're going to be the ones reporting back to Eric Wynalda about who's doing what, who's injured, who's carrying a knock, whatever. You know, in this day and age, I guess not to, you know, talk about the technology age too much, but maybe that's going to help him a lot and help him be more in touch than he would have been, obviously, you know, just a few years ago. We'll see, but the good thing is that he's promised, at least, and maybe we shouldn't be surprised hearing this from a former striker, but has promised to really instill a very attack-friendly style of play. Hopefully that doesn't lead to leaking too many goals. But, you know, I'm kind of, and I think a lot of people are in a bit of a wait-and-see mode to see how this works out.
Yeah, because... yeah, that's going to be interesting to see because I think it's like probably the biggest question mark ever. And it's such a new thing that I find it strange that how is he going to get his point across? I mean, is he really – seriously, Skype in? He's going to call his assistant on his phone to tell him what's going right, what's going wrong? I mean, that's going to be strange, Ryan.
Yeah, no, I agree. All fair questions. And, you know, I'm assuming that they have their systems in place that are going to make that communication a bit more – normal, or I guess as normal as they can be, given the circumstances. We'll see. You know, if we start out well out of the gates and get, you know, 4 points from those first two games against the Cosmos and San Antonio, I guess maybe a lot of the questions will kind of fall by the wayside. If we come out of the gates slowly, then those questions are just going to grow a bit louder. So
yeah,
hopefully
absolutely.
It'll be the former, with that said.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens there, of course. Neil, talking about the Railhawks, you were worried that they weren't making any moves. You didn't know where the players were going to come. It looks like they finally made some moves. Obviously, you still have Zach Schalosky with your forwards. You got Nick Zimmerman, Ty Cipollone in the midfield. You still have a few other players. You have maybe a new player that's currently in the midfield that I don't have his name at the moment. But I know you were worried about where they were going to find these new players, and it looks like they have a good roster so far, but you know better.
Well, I'm still worried. You know, my good friend Brian Korstad always trots out an adage when he used to be on these podcasts this time every year, and that's never bet against Colin Clark. And, you know, that was proven again true last year when the Railhawks did finish with the best overall record over the entire year. But, you know, in an increasingly financially stratified league where essentially you've got four teams spending a lot of money and some other teams that are not, Carolina is definitely playing the game of Moneyball this year. And they're trying to hold it together through guile and chemistry. The good news for Railhawks fans, Carolina's midfield is legitimately, in my opinion, perhaps one of the top three in the league. They are returning, as you said, T. Cipollone, who I think is still one of the most potent offensive threats in the league. They've got Enzo Martinez full-time this year. He played on loan with the team on and off from Real Salt Lake. Cesar Elizondo, the Costa Rican attacker, is back with the team. And they brought in Marcus Davidson, who played for the Redhawks 2 years ago and spent the last 2 years starting with Vancouver. And they have Nick Millington, who's a homegrown product, who is becoming a very, very smart, good holding midfielder. You did mention the return of Nick Zimmerman, who missed all of last year with a knee injury. Yes, he is back, and he's active, and he's practicing full-time, but he is not a starter yet. He is not at full strength. Colin Clark, who I met with last Friday, will admit that. He's appeared in two scrimmages, and he's still very tentative in his movement. So he's probably never going to get back to being the 15-goal scorer he was 2 years ago, but if he can be a contributor, that will be good. And the other good point for the Redhawks is their goalkeeper, Kira Fitzgerald, who's very solid and is a good organizer in the back. The problems for the Redhawks are in the back and the front. Three-quarters of their starting defense is gone. The only one that's returning is the eternal Kapono Lowe. At center back, they've got Connor Tobin, who's spent the last couple of years starting for Minnesota. And they've got Daniel Scott, who was an on-again, off-again starter for Tampa Bay. Right back, you know, right now it's a new guy who's a converted midfielder. They've got an empty gap there. Up front, yes, you mentioned Zach Schalowski, but he had a tough year last year, and he's got a lot to prove. Otherwise, Carolina has lost Ryan Shriver, the leading goal scorer in the league. They lost Austin Deleuze, their leading assist man and one of the their presumptive captain. So somebody's got to make up the difference. And, you know, a lot of these midfielders can get forward and score, and they're playing a rotating diamond formation that's very difficult for defenses to handle. But up front, you know, Schalowski's going to have to find his form somehow. They brought in Aaron King, who's an aging contributor. They've got Daniel Jackson, who's an interesting striker who played for Coker College last year in South Carolina. He was drafted in the fourth round of the Super Draft by Real Salt Lake, but didn't latch on. He's a 6'1 striker who's fast and has got some good foot skills for a tall guy. I'm hopeful that he'll get some time on the field. But, you know, the Railhawks midfield is as solid as they come, but in the front and the back, it's still an extremely unproven situation.
And we'll see what happens during the spring season, and then we'll reevaluate during the fall season preview show. Steven, FC Edmonton right now, Colin Miller, it always sounds like before every season he's got his hands full with the roster. I mean, you do have Neil Halavity in the midfield that can provide not just scoring but for setting up chances. But do you feel this roster possibly is a little bit better than last year, or do you still see some problems?
Well, I mean, I think FC Edmonton is the same script, and I think by now, over the last couple of years, everyone knows it. It's best defense in the league, and everyone knows it. I mean, this is the coaches talk about it. It gets in their heads. They say you might get one or two chances a game against this team, but one or two chances might be enough because FC Edmonton can't score. This team had a ridiculous number of draws last year. There were 10 1-1 draws last year. I mean, I did a story last year where I actually looked at the odds and talked to mathematicians on when they actually had 5-1-1 draws in a row and said that the odds of that were like so many million to one. Like, if you would have put $5 down on it, you would actually now be retired and buy a Hawaiian island for yourself, because it's so ridiculous how this team, you know, it's going to be 1-0 or 1-1 or 0-0, but there's not going to be a lot of scoring in the games. And now the entire offseason has been spent been trying to fix the offensive side of the equation. Everyone knows in the back line that, and around the league, you'll talk to everyone that when it comes to that back four again, Albert Watson is inarguably the best center back in the league. And this is, you know, he came in from Northern Ireland last year. By now he's got the reputation and pretty well he's established himself as the best probably overall defensive player in all of NASL. But that'll only get you halfway there, and FC Edmonton's proven that defense doesn't necessarily win you championships. The fact is that this team just needs to find a way to average a goal and a half a game, and they're a top-four team. They haven't been able to do that for the last few years. This year, the experiment continues with Frank Jonkki, Canadian international, who was playing in Finland last year. Huge target man, and he's going to come in to try to move and create some offense and to create some space for Daryl Fordyce, who's their Northern Irish striker, who really had problems finding space because they didn't really have a good knockdown striker. Michael Cox did a bit of that for Edmonton last year, but he was so frequently hurt that it gave Edmonton a real problem with consistency up front. Then you have Tomi Amiobi, Shola Amiobi's kid brother from Newcastle, who also played in Finland last year, played against Frank, and actually Frank recommended him to FC Edmonton, and he's another target man tower, and they actually might give Edmonton a bit of a twin tower attack. Edmonton made contract offers to both Shriver and Denison in the offseason. they tried to get in the sweepstakes for both of those players. That's how much they were focused on trying to improve the scoring. That didn't work out. It seems that Edmonton sets the baseline. Other teams can jump in. And that's just the nature of the beast. You know, you're playing on the turf. You're playing longer road trips. It's a harder thing to attract players. But they did get Richie Jones, a guy who San Jose was looking at. But he decided he'd rather play in NASL where he'd be guaranteed a starting job than maybe trial with San Jose again and take his chances there. And so Richie Jones, former Manchester United midfielder, comes in. They hope he provides something. Milton Blanco coming in from Atlanta, they hope he provides something in terms of moving balls to the forwards. So, again, the question is, if Frank Jahnke can score 15 goals a season, which is, you know, a lot, and if he can score 10 and Amiobi can score 10, Edmonton's definitely a top 14. If they have that same struggle scoring again, their defense is good enough that they won't finish the bottom. We know that. But, again, they'll be in that conversation where they're third from the bottom, fourth from the bottom, simply because they can't convert the scoring chances they have, and they're not turning those great defensive performances into 3 points. They're turning them to 1 point, 1 point, 1 point, which again was the pattern from last season. So again, see how Colin Miller's wholesale changes up front will pay off. Mm-hmm. There will be a bit of a price to play. That I think that Edmonton's willing to start two Canadians right now, which is Edson Edward and Jahnke. In fact, you know, San Antonio is going to have as many Canadians starting as Edmonton. And in fact, I think San Antonio, with its Canadian coach and Sean Seiko, you know, moving from Edmonton, you know, the hometown hero, had the soap opera with Colin Miller last year, now moving to play for a Canadian coach in San Antonio, Valen Marcina bringing him in, and then Adrian Kahn. To me, that's going to be an interesting rivalry. That's going to be the rivalry, I think, for Edmonton now. You know, it's not Ottawa. Ottawa's too geographically far away. I mean, we're going to have our Cup games coming up April 23rd and 30th. But I think San Antonio-Edmonton is going to turn to a really, really interesting rivalry, simply with the amount of Canadians involved. And, you know, it's become this really interesting thing. A lot of ex-white caps filter through the San Antonio system as well, and I think that's going to be something to watch. And of course, when Sean Seiko comes back home with San Antonio to Edmonton, that's going to be a huge, huge game for us. And
yeah.
I mean, you talk about losing Denison or whatever with Denison. Sean Seiko was the hometown hero, the heart and soul of this franchise, and is now left after that falling out with the coach. And this is, in terms of emotional magnitude, because he's the hometown guy, is going mm-hmm. to be huge when he comes back.
Yeah, it sounds like it's going to be an interesting thing. Let's go to Fort Lauderdale with Peter Brown. Peter, you know, Gunter Kronsteiner, you know, he shows a lot of moxie on the bench, especially when the little tiff happened over in Edmonton last year in the fall season. But it looks like he has a solid roster right now. Ivan Guerrero on the back, on the defense. You have a couple of players here like Mitchell Lopez and Chris Nurse, and of course the strikers up top. It sounds like it's a solid roster, but have you seen any improvements with it, or do you think you're going to see some improvements anyway without any addition?
Well, we definitely have some additions this year in Fort Lauderdale, and you know, we brought in an ancient goalkeeper. He's 39 years old, lots of German experience, so hopefully he shores up the back with the defense with Oka Nikolov. But, you know, also this team is this year has got something they've never had before ever, and that's consistency. They've brought back 15 players. That's either really good for consistency, or if they're bad, well, then I guess it's bad news. If they suck, we suck. But they also brought in Marius Ebers. From everything people have told me, from the coach, from the players, Ebers is the real deal. He's another German player. 36-year-old player. He's got lots of experience with St. Pauli over in Germany. So everybody tells me he's the real deal. Plus, you got to look for Mark Anderson. I talked to him the other night. He's healthy, and we all know, everybody knows in this league, he can score from anywhere when he's healthy. One of the other new players I think you got to watch out for is Matt Hall. He came over from USL's LA Blues. And he's really partnering up really, really well on that right-hand side with Darnell King, who's playing in the midfield. The two of them are lightning fast. And so Gunter's got a – it looks like Gunter – I'm excited for once. I mean, it's usually we're scared a lot of times at this point of the season. I'm pretty excited. I think Gunter's got a good lineup. He's had time to work with his team. He's never had that before. You know, he came in the middle of the season. So, you know, and we're going to catch up with Gunther later tonight, and along with Mark Dos Santos on Ultras Alive. So, you know, we'll find out more details from him later tonight. But it looks like a solid squad. If nothing else, they've got continuity, and that can only be a good thing.
And Daniel, this is Neil Morris. Let me just add one quick thing.
Sir.
I talked to Colin Clark last Friday, and I asked him which team in the league he believes is the most underrated team. And Colin knows all the players. He's seen it all. He knows everything. And he's a shrewd assessor of this league. And I asked him which team people aren't paying attention to that they need to be paying attention to. He said the Fort Lauderdale Strikers. He likes the additions they made, and he thinks they're a lot better than people are sort of or sort of giving them credit for.
I always knew I liked Colin Clark.
Ah, yes, the good old man. Real quick, I know you got to run to your show, Peter. Give me your prediction for this spring season and how it's going to pan out.
Well, I like to, of course, say the Strikers, but I'm still as confident as I am with them. You know, I've only seen them play against some colleges, so I can't really pick them with, you know, because I'm a little scared still. I've been bit by them too many times, so I can't really pick them. But you know, I'm still a huge Walter Restrepo fan. He played with the Strikers for 3 years, and now he's over in San Antonio. I'd say look out for what he's going to do in San Antonio. He's going to be a little angry. He's going to play with a chip on his shoulder. I mean, he was traded for a bag of chips and a Motel 6 day. So, you know, he's got a chip on his shoulder, especially when he plays against Fort Lauderdale. So, you know, I'd say look out for San Antonio this year.
All right. So there you go. Peter, thank you very much. Don't forget, in 14 minutes, Ultras Alive on blogtalkradio.com. Listen to Peter Brown and Uncle Ed Serrano. Peter, thank you very much, and talk to you next time.
All right, thanks a lot, guys.
No problem. That's Peter Brown once again from the Ultras Alive show. We're still here on the NASL spring season preview show, and we head over to Minnesota. John Marthaler. John, for Minnesota, it doesn't seem like a whole lot of changes. I mean, you still have Aaron Pitchcolin in the midfield, Miguel Ibarra, you got Pablo Campos up top with Simone Broccolello, and your defenders are still solid, I would have to say, with Calman, Brian, and his brother Brent, unless they're not related, and of course your keeper in Mitch Hildebrandt. I mean, it sounds like Minnesota is still solid, and they could be a threat this year in the spring.
Yeah, I think that the biggest loss of the guys you mentioned there was Pablo Campos, who tore his ACL and his MCL on that England trip we talk about.
Oh, no, I didn't hear that. I'm sorry.
Most likely he'll be missing the whole season. I think the team would have you believe that he'll be back for the fall season somehow, but I don't see how, given that he's 31 years old, I don't see how he could possibly rehab that bad. I think Minnesota's biggest additions in the offseason were a number of sort of veteran guys who were sort of off the radar and playing in leagues around the world. They signed a whole passel of Brazilians, a defender named Thiago Calvano, who is in Australia, a midfielder named Giuliano Vicentini, who has played in half the second division leagues in the world. And after the week after Campos, after his injury was announced, they announced that they were signing a guy named Daniel Mendes, who was playing in the Swedish top division, who is more of a midfielder, but they're announcing as a striker. Their biggest hole is up front at striker. They've got Christian Ramirez, who played in USL Pro last year and scored a few goals, and they're hoping he can sort of be that target forward to replace Campos for most of the year. But that's probably their biggest hole. Otherwise, as you mentioned, they sort of stood pat, and they're looking for sort of under-the-radar veterans to try to make up the squad and compete that way rather than doing what they did last year, which was try to make some big-name signings from throughout the NASL, and we all know that didn't work particularly well.
Yeah, well, we'll see what happens as we move along here, and we go to behind my backyard over at the New York Cosmos and Cesar Diaz. Cesar, obviously the keeper situation, I'm not saying it's dicey, but your rock in net is no longer on the team, I understand. I forget his name, unfortunately. I apologize for that. But you still have Carlos Mendes, Hunter Freeman, some good MLS talent that is still on this Cosmos roster. Danny Sotelo is still there. You re-signed Marco Senna. That's a big move. And, of course, we've already talked about Hans Dennison making the move from San Antonio to New York. Do you really feel strong that this team can win another a half-season title to get into the Soccer Bowl, or do you think it could be a little different because, as everyone knows, the target is on their backs?
A half-season, man. You didn't ask that to the other guys, but you're asking me if they're good for half a season? Oh, man, you're killing
no,
me.
No, just for this half a season. Just for this no, half season. I'm saving the rest
so.
Of it for the fall.
Fair enough. I don't think so. I mean, like I said, if I had to pick a team right now, it would be the Rowdies, the Scorpions, or the Railhawks. I think right now you got to look at it. This is a team now in transition, and the fact that you got Matt Stokelin that came in from Norway, Hans is still, you know, he's still pretty much, you know, he isn't 100% to play. With now Jimmy Maurer as the goalkeeper too, that's a lot of change. And if you look at last year too, though, what a lot of people need to understand is that the Cosmos were fortunate to win a lot of their games late. They were also fortunate that the opposing side wasn't able to capitalize on their opportunities, because inside the box last season we were beaten a lot and burnt. Had you know, and losing our goalkeeper, it's going to change a lot of things. I mean, it's for a 9-game season. I don't know if it's enough time. You know, I mean, plus I really don't. You know, it's not like I've seen them play too. I mean, I understand they went to Dubai and all that, but you know, I don't know how the competition. How high is the competition there?
Mm-hmm.
Hello?
Well, I just want to say this, Caesar. I'm Switzerland, okay? Everyone else can give you pot shots. I don't care. I'm Switzerland. I'm trying to be neutral here, okay? So if anyone else wants to let you have it,
no, it's all good.
Late,
it's all good. I don't blame them. You know, it's all funny. You know, it's all fantastic. But you know, but the thing about it, like as I stated earlier, though, almost with this spring season, part of me almost wants to sell. Because I'm tired of hearing, hey, the league is being bought by the Cosmos, it's being done this, it's doing that, you know, the schedule favors the Cosmos too much. So I'm looking at it more, you know what, let's win the fall, go to the championship, and repeat again from there.
That's all you can
some
do,
people
really.
Think that's
and,
reason, some people think that the reason that we added the extra team for the championship is in case the Cosmos don't make it, we got to get them in some way. So,
you know what?
I don't know.
There may be a fifth slot too. For all we know, you know, I mean, you never know. You know, if the one thing that the NASL has proven, they're a lot like the MLS. The one thing that both leagues have in common is that they change the rules as they go. If you've ever read Animal Farm, it's a lot. Well, these rules are meant for this, and here's why. So I don't know.
Mm-hmm.
Take your pick on it. Maybe we are the Napoleon of the NASL. Napoleon the Pig from Animal Farm, guys.
Yes, and the bacon gets crunchier every time you cook it longer. So anyway.
Oh, God.
Look, you had to throw it in there. I had to take advantage of it. What do you want from me? Like I said, I just went over the border. I'm sorry. But anyway, I'm only kidding. Let's go to James Hope over in San Antonio. Like we've already said, James, you lose Hans Dennison to the Cosmos. But I think you pick up a great attacking player, former Vancouver Whitecap, former FC Dallas player. You've got a French player, Eric Hasley. I think he's going to work well. You also have Sonny Torre in the front, along with Jonathan Fana in the midfield. Richie Menjivar, Walter Restrepo you have as well in the midfield, Saverda and Soto. I mean, it sounds like the attacking end is improved, but how about your defense? Has it improved
well? We certainly have. We returned two of our defenders that were really positive for us. That was Jeff Jennings and Stephen Durow. But we've added former Toronto FC player Adrian Kahn and Julius James from DC United, along with Jonathan Borrejo at defense. I think we're going to have a solid back line. We've only got five defenders right now. I think we'll probably see one or two more that might come in. But overall, it's a very solid defense. We've proven that with our preseason games. We played FC Dallas a week before their season started, which was basically their starting lineup, with 2-1-1 tie. We beat the Houston Dynamo in Houston 2-0. And then just last weekend, we played Deportivo Saprissa, which was, you know, is the CONCACAF 20th century team of that century. And we tied them 1-1. So we've had a very, very strong preseason this year as opposed to last year. And even though we've blown up this team and kind of restarted, I think Alan Marcina has put together a very strong lineup for us to be. And it's a run-and-gun type offense, and we're going to be very quick on the counterattack. And in a 9-game season, I think it could be quite effective.
Yeah, it sounds like it. Once again, this time around, you usually say in certain seasons it's a marathon, not a sprint. I think this time we're seeing the sprint in the 2014 spring season of the NASL. Garrett Tozer, Garrett, a big pickup in the goalkeeper department. Former Colorado Rapids and Chicago Firekeeper Matt Pickens joins the Rowdies. But then again, Diego Restrepo is also a big-time keeper here in the NASL for the Rowdies. Who's won the job, and was it close?
Well, I don't think there was actually any competition. You know, we got some new ownership this year, and they really stepped up the game in terms of splashing the cash to try to keep up with the Cosmos. Diego Restrepo actually went down with an Achilles injury in the middle of the preseason. Two weeks later, our new ownership group, Doyle, which goes out and spends what was reportedly is a $150,000 transfer fee to bring in Matt Pickens. I know the number sounds a little high, but you look at his salary from last year, what Pickens made in MLS, and I know he wasn't starting much due to injury, and that's quite a bit of money for him to bring in. So we're looking strong with Pickens and Keeper back there. But that's it. The money didn't stop there. We're bringing in Brian Shriver, the leading goal scorer last season, pairing him alongside Jordy Ristoff. Those two guys have looked good so far in preseason. You know, you'll either see those two up with Carl Court or one of our other forwards who, like a Lucky Cassano or Monty Walker, who you know, were regulars, got a lot of regular playing time last year. Now they'll be, you know, seeing a few extra minutes at the end towards the end of the season, bringing in some strength in midfield as well to help, you know, help replace the loss of Luke Mulholland to RSL with bringing in Daryl Russell, who, you know, he's looked really solid so far this preseason. He spent 8 years in Norwich and Toronto FC last year. Anthony Wallace looked good now that he's, you know, finally healthy, and he's been playing really well along with him and Evan Springfong on either side of a 4-3-3 or a diamond in midfield, depending on what type of formation they have. And Evan Springfong really has come along well since getting a lot of regular playing time last season. But the glue to all this has been Ricky Hill bringing back a lot of the same players. Even if that does mean Shane Hill is back, which I know a lot of other Rowdies fans are not too pleased with. But surprisingly, you know, this team has improved so much that he's not even going to be getting regular starting minutes from what it looks like this season. And even more surprisingly is that he's lost a tremendous amount of weight this offseason, and his legs are looking quite a bit better. So, I mean, that's kind of a shock to say. Things are looking good at our attacking six. However, once you move back down to the defense, it's going to be a whole lot of the same type of problems we saw last season, just getting quite a few goals, you know, high-scoring matches. We did bring in Blake Wagner from San Antonio, left back to replace the now-retired Andres Arango. So he might be he's been decent so far at left back this offseason. Of course, our captain, Frankie Sanfilippo, is still a serviceable right back. However, the center back pairing is what really worries me and makes me hesitant for picking the Rowdies to win the spring season. They've been playing a combination of Kikua Yamada, who has been around for the Rowdies since their entire renaissance, this being his fifth year, but he's 39 years old, and he does not have the legs to keep up with some of the attacking players in this league. He is smart, a cunning defender, but him and his pairing with either Jay Needham, who's really dropped off, I think, since his better days when playing with Puerto Rico Islanders, or in the alternative, J.P. Rodriguez, who was a defender for our championship team in 2012, but he didn't play outdoor professionally in 2013, but we decided to re-sign him anyways as a backup center back. We brought in Willie Hunt, who played for Atlanta last year as well. Neither of these guys have really been impressive at center back. So, kind of, things are looking really – they're going to definitely be exciting with all the attacking talent we have here, along with the guys I mentioned. Not only that, but, like, bringing in people like Casey Townsend, who's from D.C. United, who's been impressing so far coming off the bench in the offseason. Things are looking up definitely in the midfield. But unless we can maybe get a pretty solid center back along from somewhere in MLS or somewhere else, I may be a little bit apprehensive for taking us.
All right, thanks a lot, Garrett. Gentlemen, it's time for predictions, and we're going to go up to Canada first. We're going to go to Edmonton and Steve Sanders. Steve, your predictions for the spring season, who will definitely take that trip to the one-game playoff into the Soccer Bowl Championship?
Well, unless Edmonton can find a way to arrest all four teams that visit our stadium this year, and I know we're working on that plan to give them the Gunter, but no, I think New York is the strongest one, still even in a nine-game season. Just think that the financial disparity does mean a little bit. Tampa Bay is running close, but I do think there's some defensive deficiencies that they have that New York doesn't have, and I think even in a nine-game season. I think, you know, in the long run, New York and Tampa are the two teams you sort of look at as sort of being guaranteed maybe those top two spots. You know, if New York wins both seasons, then maybe Tampa finishes second and takes sort of like that spot in the fall season. And then I think that there's a bunch of teams that are in that race for the third and fourth slots in the championship. And I do think Edmonton's going to grab one of them. I think they're going to be there in probably fourth.
All right, we'll see what happens there. Let's go to the rookies now. We go to Ottawa and Brad Fugere. Brad, what is your prediction for this spring season?
Yeah, obviously as the rookie club, it's a little bit tough to make predictions for your own team. You've only seen them play together for such a little time. But, of course, we're going to qualify in the spring season. It'd be foolish of me to sit here and not predict that my own team is going to make it. I think that last game of the spring season against the New York Cosmos is going to be an important game for us. I'm moderately kidding, but at the same time, I do feel good about the team. You hear a lot of guys on the line talking about players coming into their squad and not knowing how those players are going to perform with the players who have been around, and I think the advantage that Ottawa Fury do have is that everyone's come in on the same page. There's no guys who are sitting around who have left over from the year before thinking that they're owed a spot because they were there the year before and the team performed well or not. Sort of the biggest question for the Ottawa Fury, I think, and Steve mentioned this earlier, is who sort of our rivalry team is going to be. And I guess if my prediction comes true and it does come down to the last game of the spring season and we're up against the Cosmos to maybe lock up that final spot, which, again, I blindly say today will happen, that it becomes them. Geographically, they're our closest team. And the only other team that really we have any sort of history with would be the Atlanta Silverbacks, which is a bit of a stretch in that it was a W League rivalry, but rivalry nonetheless. But I do look forward to the games against Edmonton in the Canadian Championship and the regular season game, of course.
Mm-hmm. All right. Good to hear. Derek Ritchie from Indianapolis, Indy 11. What's your prediction, sir?
Well, I would love to say that Indy 11 would come out on top in this first short part of the season, but I think it's going to take, realistically, the team a little bit longer to kind of gel and come together. I mean, there are positives of having all new folks, but there also is the whole chemistry piece, which I think needs to come together. So I would look for us to be much more competitive and maybe be at the top of the table in fall, and I'd like to see us be very competitive here in the spring. But if I had to make a guess right now for the spring season, I would probably go with the New York Cosmos, although I do like what I saw and have seen and have heard about San Antonio and kind of the style of game they plan to play. And I think Eric Astley still has something to offer, and I think he'll show that throughout the season. I'm going to have to go with New York in the spring and Indy 11 in the fall. How's that?
That's fine by me. I bet it's fine by Caesar. We'll get to him later soon. Ryan Martin, predictions.
You know, I always hate predictions because they come back to bite me. But, hey, I'll put myself out there. I'm going to go with San Antonio. Of course, they have half of our midfield from last year. It was Menjivar and Barrera, so that's not going to hurt. Seriously, though, about Barrera, he's going to be given room to roam in that system. He's going to facilitate. He's going to set Zahorski and Hasley up on a plate more times than not. In over 9 games, you know, they come out of the gate strong. I think they'll be there.
All right, we'll see what happens there. Neil Morris.
Well, it's a three-horse race, in my opinion. Tampa Bay Rowdies are always in the mix, and I like the acquisition of Shriver and Lucky Macasano. Darryl Russell is good, but, yeah, the defensive problems are pronounced, and they haven't gotten any better. San Antonio has the most impressive accumulation of talent that I've seen in this league in a long time. That midfield that Ryan just talked about is great, but Zahorski and Hasley and Fania, and a personal favorite of mine is Sandy Torre, who used to be at Carolina. He's terrific. But that's a powder keg of personalities on that team, and those are the kind of teams that can win games but don't win championships, like the Railhawks 3 years ago, the Scorpions 2 years ago, and Minnesota United 1 year ago. And I think there's going to be fireworks at some point, and probably soon. It's going to be the Cosmos. They're just a solid club. Their midfield is rock solid. Their defensive their back line is rock solid. And their two deficits from last year, in my opinion, were goalkeeper and strikers, and they upgraded both positions. They brought in two good strikers, purportedly Hans Ennison and this Mods guy out of Norway. So how can you not pick them with their coaching and their staff and everything? They're the envy of the league, but guess what? There's a reason for that.
Yep, there really is. John Marthaler in Minnesota, your predictions, please.
I like Tampa Bay just because in a 9-game season, the ability to score some goals is going to be a good thing, especially in the NASL where every game ends 1-1. So even though every game in Tampa Bay ends 9-4, if Tampa Bay's got the 9 instead of the 4, they should do all right. So I like Tampa Bay just because they're going to score some goals.
Okay, so there you go. Cosmos, Caesar, Diaz, your predictions.
Yeah, as I stated earlier, I'm going to stick with it. I don't think the Cosmos would win the spring because, you know, with all the new talent and the changes, I don't think 9 games is enough to really see how they gel. But honestly, my pick to win the spring, I'm going to go with FC Edmonton because they're one of the most, in my opinion, last year they were the best defensive team in the league. And then looking at it, and I think that with this being the season, if they play the type of football that they played last year, especially like the way they did last spring where they pretty much outmuscled their opponents and scored goals. And, you know, I think they can pull the shocking upset in the 9-game season. So, yeah, FC Edmonton for the spring.
Wow, FC Edmonton, there's a good one. Okay, we head on down to San Antonio.
Look at their stats. Look at their stats.
Yep. Go ahead, James.
I too think it's going to be a three-way race. I think San Antonio has put together a very talented team, as I said before. New York has always been there, and I think Tampa Bay is the third player here. I think the advantage that we're going to have for San Antonio, which will make it more of a two-way race, is between us and New York, is because we will get Tampa at home. And I think that may be the deciding factor with a large crowd based on our rivalry with Tampa as well. I think that we'll be able to push that over the top with this 9-game season. It's favorable to the teams that have 5 home games. San Antonio has 5 home games, and teams have a tendency to win more on the road. I mean, at home, so I think, therefore, it's going to give San Antonio and New York those edges. So it's going to come down to those two.
All right. That's a pretty good one right there. And finally, Garrett Tozer down in Tampa. Garrett, your predictions.
Yeah, I was mentioning the defensive concerns the Rowdies have. They definitely are concerns, but I don't think they're enough to hold us back in the in a short 9-game season with the attacking we've brought in, especially what I was mentioning earlier, having not just 5 home games, you know, being one of those teams. We play the Cosmos at home and the Strikers at home right towards the end of the season, openers at home, or last game of the regular season's at home. We don't have to go to Edmonton. All those factors, and actually Darryl Russell does a good job covering defensively in the midfield. I think that we'll come away with the trophy at the end of the spring season.
All right, gentlemen. I always appreciate you guys coming on, talking about your clubs in the North American Soccer League. Good luck to all of you in the spring season. And once again, we'll hope to have all of you on once again when the fall season gets underway after the World Cup. Enjoy the spring season. Good luck in the Open Cup. And to our two Canadian teams, good luck in the Canadian Championship for that CCL spot. And enjoy the season, gentlemen. Thank you again.
Thanks for having us, Dan.
Thank you.
Thank you, Daniel.
No problem at all. Once again, we're going to run down the roster as these gentlemen gave me their time. Ryan Martin from Atlanta, Neil Morris from Carolina, Steve Sander from Edmonton, Peter Brown from Fort Lauderdale, Derek Ritchie in Indianapolis, and John Marthaler in Minnesota, Cesar Diaz in New York and the Bronx, Long Island, Brad Foguer in Ottawa, James Hope in San Antonio, and Garrett Tozer over in Tampa Bay. Thank you, everyone, for joining me. And here's the schedule for the opening season. It's this weekend, this coming Saturday and Sunday. It starts off on Saturday, April 12th, as we get ready for the spring season. The Fort Lauderdale Strikers are going to host the Ottawa Fury at Lockhart Stadium, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. The Indy 11, their home opener, over at the Mitchell A. Carroll Stadium at IUPUI. They'll be hosting the Carolina Railhawks, 7:30 p.m. Eastern. Tampa Bay Rowdies hosting FC Edmonton at Al Lang Stadium. That's at 7:30 p.m. Eastern. San Antonio Scorpions hosting the Minnesota United FC at Toyota Field, 8:30 p.m. Eastern, 7:30 p.m. Central. And finally, on Sunday, April the 13th, the New York Cosmos will open their season against the Atlanta Silverbacks over at James Short Stadium on the campus of Hofstra University, 5 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Head on over to NASL.com to keep up with everything going on in the second division of American soccer. It is going to be an interesting thing when it's no longer a marathon in this particular season. It will be a sprint. It should be exciting. Now it's time, of course, to talk about the New York Red Bulls in Major League Soccer as they headed up to Montreal for a 2-2 draw. And to be honest, I understand what everyone's talking about. I understand what everyone is complaining about. They drew again. But they drew on the road. And they drew in a place where it's field turf for the early season in Montreal. No Thierry Henry, no Jaimison Olave, but no Tim Cahill due to the strained hamstring in his right leg that he'll be missing. He already missed that first game. He'll be missing this coming Saturday at BC, and then, of course, the home game. We'll see what happens if he is able to play coming off the bench, or he might miraculously start. But I will say this. That was a fantastic match, if you are a New York Red Bulls supporter. Because why? Because it could have been a lot worse. They did look terrible at the start of the match. They gave up a cheap goal. And then here comes Lloyd Sam, who got a lot of the ball finally in both halves, down the right side. What a cross! He just showed you why he won the job in the midfield on the right wing, the starting spot. I know Eric Alexander had a decent game. I know Eric Alexander looked okay. The truth is this. The truth is that Lloyd Sam, he can score it. He can cross it. He's got the speed to bring up the ball. And I'm very happy to see Mike Petke actually saying, he is my guy now. He's won the job. This is my guy now on the right wing midfield. This is the guy who's definitely going to be my guy in the starting 11. And that, my friends, is pretty darn good when you're seeing Mike Petke giving him the confidence that he has. You know, I know he's earned Mike Petke's confidence. And, you know, this is nothing against Mike, because this is how he's going to manage. This is how he's going to coach this side. He is going to go out there, and he is going to tell people, look, you know, there's going to be some competition. There's definitely going to be some competition. And I got to tell you that it's one of those things that this is what's going to happen when you have a player like Eric Alexander who had a very good 2013, but you see Lloyd Sam saying, I want that spot. You're my teammate, and I like you, guy, but that's my spot, and I'm going to take it. And Lloyd Sam, what a cross. And an excellent job by Johnny Steele to pick up his left leg and to just punch it, bunt it past Perkins and into the net in the 31st minute. And you level it at one apiece. And then, of course, the big man, the man who was friends with Thierry Henry since they were kids back in France. This is a guy who was ridiculed all the time. There was a Twitter account made up for him saying, has Peggy scored? And every time he's on the field, and whenever he doesn't get a goal, it's been no. Peggy Luyendula makes a great goal to make it 2-1 Red Bulls in the first half, 3-4 minutes later. First of all, Marco Di Vaio. Thank you, sir. Thank you, Mr. Di Vaio, because you gave the Red Bulls a free shot. We know the cross was not meant for Johnny Steele. We know that the cross was not supposed to go towards him, but you put it towards him anyway. You put it towards him, and guess what he does? He sets up Luyendula for a fantastic ball, and I'll be honest with you, I thought it was going to go to Bradley Wright Phillips, but he goes and finds Peggy Luyendula, and Luyendula converts the goal to make it 2-1 Red Bulls, his second of the season, and right now the only attacking player to have more than a goal in the season. And as of right now, Peggy Luyendula, 2 goals in 2 consecutive matches. That great finisher from Luyendula to save a point, and this one to put them in the lead. And how about that penalty call in the second half? Finally, a penalty for the Red Bulls. They get one. Bradley Wright Phillips, he gets grabbed. He's hauled down. Hint of the dive? Probably. But you know what? If the defender does not grab Bradley Wright Phillips in the area, then we have to say it's a penalty. A penalty is a penalty is a penalty. And let me tell you something. That's a penalty. Unfortunately, it didn't convert into a penalty because while Troy Perkins dives to his right, and Luyendula is going to his left, unfortunately, Luyendula nails the far post and out. Should have been 3-1 Red Bulls. You better believe it should have been. And then the second goal for Montreal, and you just have to say, unfortunately, it was a great goal. I mean, there's nothing Robles can do about that one. Luis Robles was spectacular all match long, once again saving the rear end of his teammates out there at the Olympic Stadium. And that, my friends, would be that. The New York Red Bulls, the Montreal Impact, it looked like a possibility of a second or a third goal, I should say, for Montreal. Did not happen. A couple of close calls, a couple of bad mishits here and there. But once again, at the end of it all, at the end of it all, the New York Red Bulls leave Montreal by a final of 2-2. And you know what? This was a big point on the road. I know you're frustrated. It's 4 straight games out of 5 that they have earned a point. Obviously, the home opener against the Rapids should have been 3 points. The way they were playing in the second half against Chicago Fire, they could have nicked a second goal early, or shall I say late in the first half and early in the second half. Did not happen. That chance in second half stoppage time from Luyendula, big time point to take it home, which shouldn't have happened in the first place, but it did. And then you have this one. Look, I understand what everyone's talking about. You know, it's field turf. It's not supposed to be one of those things. One second, please. So anyway, as I was saying, and once again, the hotline is going off for no reason. Sorry about that. But anyway, you know, I understand why everyone's having these problems, because you're sick and tired of the draws. But once again, you feel that this team is finally starting to come around. And once again with the field turf, because that's how I lost my train of thought there for a minute. The field turf, I understand. Everyone's playing on it. I don't understand why Olave doesn't want to play on it, and I don't understand why Thierry Henry doesn't want to play on it. Look, Olave, he likes to play on the natural stuff fine. Thierry Henry, once again, it's the chronic Achilles tendon that is giving him problems. Now, you can say, have the surgery and you know, get a new one in there and he'll be fine. But at what cost would you lose a Thierry Henry? Because it's not just the field turf. It's an extra layer of sand that's put underneath the turf. And once again, let's not forget the Canadian Football League, Montreal Alouettes, they use the Olympic Stadium for their games, unless they've already have their new stadium already. But this is the rule, you know, especially the weather in Canada, where it's really extremely bitterly cold, and I don't know if anyone can play soccer out there at the Stade Saputo. It would be nice. Maybe they build a temporary roof or something, or you know, expand it so you can put an inflatable roof over it. But that's not what's going on right now in Montreal. Indoors, they just go down the walking path to the Olympic Stadium. But once again, Tim Kay, you know, once again, not to go back to, we'll go to Tim Cahill in a minute, but once again, you just have to understand that's what goes on over in Seattle. That's what goes on with New England, in Montreal, when they're indoors early in the season. I'm not saying I favor that idea, but I'm not going to tell these teams or these cities how they should set up the field. Portland does not have that type of field turf. Portland, obviously, it's just a plain rollout field turf carpet, but it doesn't have that extra stuff underneath it. It's just rolled over the concrete, and there it is. I'm not here to tell these people how they should set up their stadiums. That's not my job. The one thing is this, is that if this is where they're going to play, then that's where they're going to play. Because, you know, if it's not feasible to have a natural grass surface, fine. Would I like to see it? Of course. Of course I'd like to see it. Of course I would love to see that happen. But unfortunately, this is what the situation is. And it's going to be that situation forever and ever until all of a sudden either A, CenturyLink Field decides to change it from field turf to grass, or the Seattle Sounders will go and build their own stadium and they'll have a natural grass surface. If that happens, fine. If it doesn't happen, fine. I'm not here to complain about it. I'm just telling you this is what it is. It's not my business. But let me just say this, once again, if this is what's going to happen, this is how it is. The same thing with Toronto. You know, they start the season over at Rogers Centre when they can't play at BMO Field because of the snow and how everything goes on up in Canada with the weather. Vancouver, you know, they play at BC Place, even though they're lucky to have a retractable roof there that they can handle the elements, not a problem. But this is the situation that's in front of us. If you're a visiting side going to see these cities, or if the hometown crowd wants to see these players and they're not because of the situation. Like I said, not my call. And I will not, and I will continue to say, not my call. But anyway, that's the situation we have over there. Now let's get to the real matter at hand here. and that is this. Peggy Lou Yandula is starting to look comfortable in Major League Soccer. Peggy Lou Yandula is looking solid in Major League Soccer. Let's not forget that this man, at the end of last year, I know he converted off a penalty for his only goal of the season last year, but the truth of the matter is this. The man is comfortable in midfield. The man is comfortable holding the ball, bringing up the ball, finding players to set up so they can score the goals. He proved that in the final game against the Chicago Fire. While I do understand what Mike Petke is trying to do, and I understand he's trying to be loyal to Eric Alexander, and this has to be said, and I'm only saying this because you got to speak the truth. I think Eric Alexander right now is going to get squeezed out of the starting 11. I think he'll be best served coming off the bench when he needs to sub in for either Lloyd Pham or Peggy Lou Yandula or for Dax McCarty if he's going to play that sweeper role, which is not his natural position, but I think he would play it to play some defense and also bring the ball up and attack because you don't mind that at all from a player like Eric Alexander. But I have to say it. This guy, Eric Alexander, as decent as he was last year, and you're happy for how he played, but once again, I don't believe that this is the right thing to do. Lou Yandula needs to be behind the strikers. He needs to attack with the ball. He needs to feed the ball to both Thierry Henry and whoever's with him up top, either it's Tim Cahill or Bradley Wright Phillips. One of the two are going to probably be out there. But I will say this, it's just been a little bit difficult seeing them play with the ball and, of course, a little mishmashing here and there. But once again, Peggy Lou Yandula, you're seeing him being comfortable out there. You're seeing him handle the offense, attacking with the ball and holding on to the ball. And when he's ready to go and get to the net, he'll score now. I understand it's still early in the season. Points are still vital to get off to a good start. They get a win on the road in D.C. this coming Saturday. I think things are starting to become better, looking better, and they'll be back in the top five of the East. All Peggy Lou Yandula needed was some comfort. And that's all he needed. He needed some comfort time. He needed a lot of time to make sure that he was doing, he's comfortable in the league. And the only player that I can compare him to that had something like this done back in the day as either the Metro Stars or currently Red Bulls, and I think you know who I'm talking about if you are a supporter of this club all the way back to 1996, and I'm talking about Sergio Galvan Ray, the king of goals. Sergio Galvan Ray, in his first year with the Metros, he couldn't score. He had chance after chance after chance, and he kept missing the net. And then finally, he got his goal late in the season. He had two goals in his first season in Major League Soccer over at Giant Stadium. What happened in the next year, in 2005? He scored 8 goals in all competitions. He got comfortable. He looked good. He just played better. Everything he did was fantastic. 8 goals in all competitions. Of course, he equaled his goal total in a game against Kansas City. I remember him in this game against the Columbus Crew at Giant Stadium late in August of 2005. Because it was pouring rain. It was one of those huge thunderstorms that came over, and it dumped so much water on you. But at the same time, lightning was flashing all over the place, and the referees had to put a stop to the match. So after they put the stop to the match, and we're still in the middle of the first half, let's not forget, and the Metro Stars were down 1-0 in this game. What happened? They come back after the storm passed away, and then here comes the Metro Stars, and Sergio Galvan Rey scores a hell of a goal in the second half that was making it 2-1 Metro Stars, and they won it. That was a big goal, especially from him, where he scored, he jumped over the ad signs, he ran behind the net, and then he jumped back over the ad signs, and he celebrated with his teammates. That was unbelievable. That was just absolutely an unbelievable moment from Sergio Galvan Rey. And I'm not the type of guy that's going to harp on someone that I'm seeing who's working hard. If they're being lazy, I'll let them have it. But if I see them working hard and they're producing and they're trying to do well, you know, I'm not going to let them have it. I'm not going to harp on it. Because I know for a fact Sergio Galvan Rey was trying to work hard and trying to get that goal to help the Metro Stars win. Nothing much afterwards in 2005. He left and went back down to South America, but still, though. Sergio Galvan Rey and Peggy Lou Yundula, maybe not exactly mirroring their careers here in MLS, but you know what? If Lou Yundula can have a solid season, scoring a couple of goals, assisting on a couple of goals, and just being that prolific attacking midfielder, not only for him to convert, but to help his strikers convert by feeding them some good balls, Peggy Lou Yundula should have a successful season. And just like for Mike Petke, for him as the second season as a head coach, Peggy Lou Yundula is in his second season as a member of the New York Red Bulls. Possibly a sophomore slump? I don't know. But let me just say this. If the tactics are done the right way, then I think Peggy Lou Yundula will be fine. I think he will do very good, and he'll have a better second season. Because Peggy Lou Yundula is important to this team. He needs to go out there, he needs to set some guys up, and he needs to step inside in the right spots to score some goals, whether it's kicked in, headed in, chested in, or rear-ended it in. It does not matter. Peggy Lou Yundula is the guy that, you know, many are saying, and my friend Miguel Nunez, of course, the big bad viper at the Viper's Nest, says, this is our number 10. This guy should be our number 10. I agree. I think he should be our number 10. I think this is the guy that makes things happen. Because he said so last year in the after winning the Supporters' Shield inside the locker room to the media. He would rather hold the ball and distribute than to score goals, because that's what his job is. But he also knows that he needs to score some goals to help the team win. So I really think right now Peggy Lou Yundula is the man right now for the Red Bulls. And now let's talk about Luis Robles. He has been an absolute monster keeping net for this team. Not his fault getting blitzed 4-1 in Vancouver. Well, let's be honest, 4-0. Not his fault. But you have to say for Luis Robles, he has done a fantastic job making all these saves, keeping the boys in the game. Diving saves, punching saves, leaping saves that he has to punch out. Running over the opposition to keep the ball away from his goal. Luis Robles has done a fantastic job early in the season, but you're hoping that in this game starts the boys turning on the goal-scoring machine. You're hoping that what you saw from the guys scoring those two goals in the first half, that this is finally going to be the start of something. Because as fantastic as Robles has been, you don't want to tire him out. You don't want to keep on giving up chances, whether they're quality or not. You don't want to keep on giving the opposition too many chances and then you're going to tire him out. I know that's what Ryan Mara is here for, to possibly give a break to Robles, but still, though, you don't want to see Robles get tired out before you get to the World Cup break. Because that's the one problem that I think they're going to have if they keep on going on like this. Now, I'm not saying Ryan Mara is not quality. I think Ryan Mara, when he was drafted and started when no one else was starting, that he was proving that he can do the job. And I really think he can do the job in relief for Robles if they're going to give him a break, because sooner or later he's going to need a break. Don't wait till after the road trip to New England. If he's going to need a break soon, you give it to him. Because while it looks like he's taking a lot of shots, he's really, really taking a lot of shots. Not hockey type of shots, but he's taking a lot of shots. And I just don't want to see him get tired so quickly. That's all. If the Red Bulls can find a way to give him a break, they can find a way to say, hey, listen, we're going to give you a break and let Ryan play a game here and there. I mean, that's fine. But one thing is for sure. One thing is for sure is that this is the situation that is in front of us right now. Don't get tired out too early. Go out there, play hard, but don't let Robles get tired out too quickly. Because if that happens, I think there's a problem. And once again, like I said, I trust Ryan Mara to go out there and to play the best game he can. But right now, it's just not feasible to let Robles get tired out too quickly. Five games. It's early. I know. But like I said before, the defense needs to be better. But you got to say for Luis Robles, he has done a fantastic job once again in net. He has kept the team alive. He's kept it going. He is working it really hard, really strong. And he's just doing a fantastic job. And Luis Robles right now is just, I would say, if you're going to give him the Goalkeeper of the Year award right now, I think it's him. I think it is him right now. And as we keep on moving here on the 40 Cents Fire American Soccer Show, once again, don't forget, everybody, next Monday, the show will be on at 1 o'clock Eastern in the afternoon due to the first night of Passover. So if you can't catch it live, don't worry about it. You can catch it on the archive. If you can catch it live, I really do appreciate it. I thank you, as always, for being the loyal listeners that you are. I always appreciate you guys listening to this show. And as we continue on here, and don't forget as well, join me starting June 12th. The FIFA World Cup will be in Brazil. Myself, along with Carter Krishnayer of World Soccer Talk, he'll be my co-host as we review every single World Cup day that is being played on ESPN, ESPN2, as well as ESPN3, online, ABC if it's on there, the FIFA World Cup on ESPN and ESPN2. It's going to be fantastic. I cannot wait. Carter Krishnayer and I will be reviewing all the games on all days that are scheduled for World Cup days. Not only will we have Kardik on along with myself, we'll have other journos on as well, bloggers, journos that cover, of course, not just an MLS, but, of course, other national teams. Eric Krakow, if you know him, Big Soccer Head on Twitter, he'll be helping me out with some of these games against Portugal. We'll contact Jonathan Johnson as he covers French League One as well as the French national team over on French Football Weekly as well as Bleacher Report, ESPN FC, Sky Sports in France. And we'll get on other people as well to help us review some of these games from there, either from their region, from their confederation, or the national team that they do support or cover. So it's going to be a lot of fun this coming June. We're going to do it from June 12th all the way through July 13th. And at the same time, we'll try to fit in two Open Cup review shows, only for an hour, of course. So we'll see what happens then, and other things that are going on. So it should be a lot of fun. It should be exciting. And I cannot wait to get this thing going. And you can listen here, blogtalkradio.com/FoyersDeansFire. Head over to Block Talk Radio. Go to The Road to Brazil. You can check out where my show is over there. It's going to be a lot of fun. I cannot wait. It's going to be exciting. I know you guys can't wait for the World Cup. Finishing up here, of course, with Armando, the central defender. You know, I have to admit that seeing him perform at the start of the season was not good, because every time he challenged the ball in the air, you saw his legs whip out outside, and catching his marker studs onto the upper thigh area, the knee, the leg, near the crotch, the groin area. You know, you're thinking to yourself, this guy is going to get sent off. And apparently, something happened in this situation. Mike Pecky was told by the fourth official in the game against Chivas USA that the league is watching him now. Even though he got suspended for the Chicago Fire game for what he did to DeShawn Brown at the home opener against the Rapids, and yes, that play was not booked. Should have been, but it wasn't. What happens? Really simple. He was told, Mike Pecky, by the fourth official in the Chivas game, the league's watching him now, you know, making sure he doesn't try to accidentally injure people. And I've been told by a couple of people, Dan, he's a hack. He just sliced three guys. You know, he just winged them, like, you know, he's going intentionally at them. And you know what? It's, you know, it's tough to see that live, but when you watch it at home, you're watching the replay. Yeah, he intentionally went at, you know, he intentionally or intentionally, unintentionally got him. And he needs to calm down, because they're going to tag him for it, and they already did. And they could tag him again, and the referees have been instructed, hey, listen, if he pulls that off again, you probably show a yellow or you show him a red. And he can't do that here. But I have to say this. I do have to say this. I applaud Armando for not foolishly or going over the top on his defending, because he finally showed some brains. He showed some brains. He was able to calm himself down. Maybe it costed a goal because you're trying to take away a little bit of aggressiveness. But it did cost that first goal in Montreal. And maybe we need him to keep that aggressiveness. You just don't have to go over the top. That's what I'm saying. You don't have to go over the top, because it's ridiculous. It's not smart. And he needs to understand, you know, this isn't Spain. You know, they're, you know, everything's being used, video technology is being used. Hey, that should have been a yellow book card, that should have been a booking, so we're going to suspend him. Even though you still have to say the referee should have given Armando a booking then you wouldn't have the need to have this video review with the disciplinary committee, but still, it has to be done. But at the end of the day, the New York Red Bulls, they draw 2-2 over at the Olympic Stadium up in Montreal, Quebec, Canada. They do have 4 points, all four draws in the last five, in these last four games. We'll see what happens as they face DC United over at RFK Stadium this coming Saturday night, 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, locally here on MSG Plus, channel 72 on your Optimum Cable Vision box. Check your other local numbers, channel numbers for whatever cable company, cable providers you have, as well as DirecTV and Dish Network on the satellite. So while I did not have an intro monologue to begin this this show, I'll exit the show with a monologue. And basically, it's basically talking to you guys. Now, you've done nothing wrong. Let me just say this right off the bat. You have done nothing wrong at all. But I have to ask a question that someone, actually a listener, asked me. He heard my voice, came up to me and said to me, "Are you Daniel Feuerstein? Are you Feuerstein's Fire?" I'm like, "Yeah, yes, I am." "Oh, I'm such a fan of your show. You're so great. You're so great. You know, your dedication to the game in the country is fantastic, in the U.S. and Canada. Oh, you're such a wonderful guy. You're so open. You're so honest. Thank you." But I have to ask you a question. And I said, "Well, what's your question? Why did you say to us that you don't want our money?" And I guess I never thought I'd hear this thing. I never thought I'd hear this from a fan. And, you know, here's my feeling. And once again, this is me. This is how I feel. And it's really simple. You know, the way that, and I'm not trying to be overly political here or anything. It's just that today it's very tough in our country, in the United States, that people don't have jobs. And while I'll admit that when I first started this, I did have a job in the sports broadcasting business, production business, you know, it wasn't going to be just, you know, about, you know, oh, having fun with it. This was being serious from start to finish. This was always going to be a serious show. This was always going to be a serious show talking about American soccer, because I wanted to prove to people who I worked with who thought soccer was never going to make it in this country. And it has. And then it's, of course, talking about those people who are only EPL fans. They're only La Liga fans, only Serie A fans, only Bundesliga fans. And the truth of the matter is, you got to prove them wrong too. You have to prove people wrong that you can do this show, that you can stand or sit in front of your computer and, you know, show the people that you can talk about soccer in this country. Or, of course, as those expats from England that are living here in our country, as they say in the game, say in the world, football. And then you hear about these things like Indiegogo and you hear about, you know, other networks or other podcasts, you know, setting up these Indiegogo accounts, charity accounts, but their charity is towards you. Or if I did something like this, towards me. And I'm asking a question about why are these people doing this? And they're saying it's just for operating costs. Well, I'll be honest with you. My operating costs are basically just the Skype and the amount I'm paying to Blog Talk Radio to do 2 hours a day or 2 hours a week, depending on how many shows I'm going to do, and discussing whatever topics there is. I'll be honest with you. I am someone that is old school. I think you have to work hard for the money. I think you, someone like me, you want to go to the businesses that are either these soccer shops or these bars that show the games, maybe these restaurants that these people, they love the game, that you say to them, look, I'm looking for some sponsorships if you would like to sponsor this show. And I know it's going to be difficult going to these big-time companies because they don't believe in this mechanism. They don't believe in internet radio so much. They don't believe that podcasting is enough, depending on what part of the country you're in. I know besides doing this, I also do an NFL podcast. Obviously, I know it's don't say it, it's don't say this, don't say that. But the point is this, is that, you know, I do more than just one of these things. And I like it. You know, I'm not here to judge anybody what they do. The point is that I'm enjoying what I'm doing. And this was not my first love, to be honest with you. You know, baseball from the Bronx, I'm a Yankees fan. The NFL, like I said, it's called thejetsbeat.com, but the Jets Beat podcast is also here on blogtalkradio.com. I'm a hockey fan, obviously. I love the New York Rangers. I've lost interest in basketball. I have. I think it's too robotic. I think it's just not as exciting as it used to be. And it's not like how it used to be in the 80s, because I thought that's when it was really great basketball back then. The NBA is, I've lost interest in it. I've been losing interest in baseball as well. Not because the Yankees with their partnership with New York City FC, no. I've been losing my interest in baseball as well. Not that much. I still follow the Yankees. I still enjoy going to Yankee Stadium when I have the money, or going to the minor league games that are near the area, like in Staten Island and Brooklyn, Trenton, New Jersey, other minor league baseball stadiums that are affiliated with major league teams or the independent leagues. I still like baseball, just not at the level like I used to, because I found a common thing about football, soccer. So much intrigue, so much excitement, so much what's going to happen next. What are you going to do when you bring the ball up? What's going to happen when all of a sudden you're going to take a shot just a little bit past or a little behind midfield line, and then you just boot it up in the air, and then as it lands near the goal line, it bounces down in front of the goal line. The keeper lost it, and then it goes inside the net, inside the top of the net, for a goal that you never thought you'd ever see in your entire life. When Thierry Henry scored that afternoon goal against Chicago Fire from distance off the near post and in, that was spectacular. The Olympico goal from the corner, the far corner, and it bends and it hits the inside of that post again, and it beats the backup keeper for the Columbus Crew, and it goes through him because he thought it wasn't going to go in, and then it did. That's excitement. That's unbelievable. You never thought you'd see something like that in your life, and that is what makes you feel like you're a part of this. But as I was saying, you see people go online asking for money to help with operating costs. And the way things are these days, I just don't think it's right. I just feel that the way the situation is, I just don't think it's a right thing to do to ask your audience for money. It's not about, you know, I'm poo-pooing this or these are evil people, they should not be doing it. I'm not really attacking them. I'm just stating how I feel, because it's tough these days. Those, you know, there's barely any jobs in the broadcast business. And I'm fighting all the time to try and get people to say, hey, listen to my show. Listen to what I'm saying. You know, maybe you'll like it. Maybe you'll give me an opportunity. And that's what I'm waiting for, to be honest. If there comes a time that I'm able to get back on my feet, and let me just say this right now, this is a job. Don't get me wrong. What I'm doing right now is a job because you guys are starving for that information. You guys are starving to know what's going on within the United States, talking about Major League Soccer, what's going on in the North American Soccer League, what's going on in the USL Pro Leagues, the PDLs, the U.S. Open Cup, the CONCACAF Champions League, U.S. Men's National Team friendlies, World Cup qualifying, official matches, Gold Cup tournaments, and when they qualify for the World Cup. I know that's what you guys want. Believe me. I know you want that. You want to be respected like the other four major sports and the college sports in this country. And while the respect is coming and the respect is here, there is only one problem. The mainstream sports media still refuses up to a point that this is not a legitimate sport to cover. They keep saying it, even though you don't hear it. Send that game back to Europe. And that's the problem we have here. You still have the dinosaurs that are still talking about this as not an American sport. When it's been here since maybe like the 1900s, 1910s, this sport still gets no respect. And that's why I'm doing what I'm doing, to get the respect it truly deserves. No more Euro snobs. No more soccer haters. We have grown up. All I want from you guys is your ears. I want you to listen to what I have to say. I want you to either debate me if you disagree, or if you think I'm on the right track, you can go ahead and say it. Because I'm giving you the opportunity to give your opinion about what my opinion is. If I'm right, thank you. Thank you very much. If I'm wrong, go ahead, debate me. Tell me why I'm wrong. It's okay. It's not like I'm going to open up, I'm going to breathe fire and burn your hair off, for God's sakes. No, that's not going to happen. But at the same time, I'm just like you. I'm just like every other guy. I just want to be respected for the job I'm doing here. That's all it is. I'm like you guys. I want to see the game succeed. And I want to make sure our first division league remains viable. There will be a lot of questions being thrown out that we'll probably never have answers to. We'll still discuss why that mechanism is still being talked about. But I already have an answer for that question. And it's really simple. Until there is peace between all of our leagues and no one is competing against each other, I'm not saying know your role. All I'm saying is when there's internal peace and then all the owners want what some of you guys want, then it's going to happen, and then we will succeed as one. Until that day comes, it's not coming anytime soon. I want to thank my guests tonight, Ryan Martin, Neil Morris, Steve Sander, Peter Brown, Derek Ritchie, John Marthaler, Cesar Diaz, Brad Fulguer, James Hope, and Garrett Tozer. Previewing the NASL spring season, it's going to start this weekend. Get ready. Go to NASL.com once again. for all your information. My name's Daniel Feuerstein. Thank you very much for listening tonight. And as always, please enjoy your football. Join me again this coming Monday, and I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye for now.